Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome in to this Thursday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and we're going to be talking about a subject today that I think is on the mind of many people because of a number of different circumstances that have taken place in our culture just recently, within the last few weeks. For one, was the case that came up when the president was making an address to a joint session of Congress. We all know about, of course, the comment that was made by South Carolina Republican Representative Joe Wilson, where he interrupted the President Obama's speech by yelling out, "You lie." That's one that's been talked about on many talk radio programs. So for the last couple of weeks about that statement, there's now been bumper stickers made and T-shirts made over that as well. So here, this is something that has been in the news quite a bit. Here's a second one. Just a little bit more recently, we had an outburst by the tennis star Serena Williams, who lost her cool at the U.S. Open semifinal, and she launched into a blistering salvo at the line judge, who had called her on a foot fault. She went over the line when serving the ball, and she also went over the line in addressing the line judge there, and she apologized, but afterwards people felt that her first apology was lackluster. She apologized again, and she's on a little bit of an apology tour at this particular time as well. Here's a third one that has come up just recently, Kanye West. You may be familiar with him, but he was doing some of the emceeing at Radio City Music Hall recently for the MTV Music Awards. And Taylor Swift had won one of the awards, but he came up and yanked the microphone out of her hand and then began to tell Beyonce, who was also there in the audience, that her video was much better than Taylor Swift's. And so it was a rude moment. Got a comment from the president that I can't repeat on the radio program. But these types of things are taking place in our society today, and it has caused a lot of people to ask the question, what has become of civility? In fact, there was an article entitled that same name, or pretty close to that, "What Happened to Civility," was what the article was entitled recently in USA Today, just a week or 10 days or so ago, where they write about all of these things that were taking place that I just mentioned. And so that's what we want to talk about today. What about this idea of civility? Is this something that Christians should be interested in? Is this something that Christians should be promoting? How should we deal with this seeming lack of civility in our society today? Let me read to you a statement from the publisher of the book that we're going to be talking about today. That book is called The Case for Civility and Why Our Future Depends on It, and it's written by Dr. Os Guinness. Let me read an opening statement here from the publisher, and then we'll go ahead and welcome Dr. Guinness into the program today. It says this: in a world torn apart by religious extremism on the one side and a strident secularism on the other, no question is more urgent than how we live with our deepest differences, especially our religious and ideological differences. The Case for Civility is a proposal for restoring civility in America as a way to foster civility around the world. Influential Christian writer and speaker Os Guinness makes a passionate plea to put an end to the polarization of American politics and culture that, rather than creating a public space for real debate, threatens to reverse the very principles our founders set in motion and that have long preserved liberty, diversity, and unity in this country. Well, with that, there's a little bit of a background about our topic today. Let me go ahead and welcome our special guest into the discussion here today. Our guest is Os Guinness. He is the author and an author of a number of books and also a social critic. He is currently the senior fellow at the East-West Institute in New York. He has written or edited more than 25 books, including The American Hour, A Time for Truth, The Call, Invitation to the Classics, and so on. All of these books now leading up to one of his latest books, The Case for Civility and Why Our Future Depends Upon It, published by Harper One in January of 2008. By the way, we will be giving away copies of this book on the radio program today, so I'll be giving you those numbers to call and ways to participate in the program as well in just a second. With that, Dr. Guinness, welcome into the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
My pleasure to be with you.
Dr. Guinness, I've read through your book and listened to some of the interviews that you have done previously and some of the articles that you have written, and I just think that it may be helpful at the beginning of the broadcast here for us to define a few of the terms that you talk about in your book. For instance, maybe we could start by defining a term that you use in your book. Certainly not that's not the only place it is used, but a term that you refer to, and that is the idea of culture wars. Would you take a moment to give us a good working definition of that for our discussion today?
Well, culture warring is when the disagreements in the political arena go far deeper than partisan political points and raise issues that are deeply in the culture, where you have very different views. So, for example, if you raise, what is life? Or what's a family? Or is there such a thing as truth? Or should character matter in an American leader? All Americans, left, right, and center, would agree on the answer to those things, probably right up to the 1960s. But ideas arose in the 1960s, so today you'll have someone somewhere who challenges every single one of those things. And that's what I mean by the culture war. You see it in issues like abortion or the family arguments and many, many others, issues that are inextricably rooted in cultural rather than political things.
Okay. Let's define also, just got two or three definitions here that I think would be helpful for us to set the stage with, and then we'll get right into the actual argument that you lay out, the case for civility in your book. But the second definition that I think would be helpful, if we have now defined culture wars themselves, let's talk about the two forces that are at war. Let's talk about the culture warriors. Who are they on the various extremes?
Well, let me back up a bit, because you started with Serena Williams and, you know, Kanye West and so on. And
right.
Obviously the incivility in America now is much wider than what I'm looking at in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at what is worldwide the huge challenge of living with our deepest differences when those differences are religious. So that's the key thing. I'm not talking about the wider thing of, say, manners
okay. In
American society. But the two extremes on this level, and of course they're extremes as each sees the other, neither side sees itself as an extreme, are what Richard Neuhaus called on one side the supporters of a naked public square, which would be secularists and separationists who'd like to keep all religion antiseptically out of public life. And that's the more left-wing liberal side. On the other side, you have what's called the sacred public square, those who would like to see one religion. For some people, it's the Muslims, but that's unlikely for the moment. With others, it's the Christian faith. Privileged, they can't be established, but privileged in discussions like, say, school prayer in public schools.
Okay, so there's the two groups that we have. One more definition, and then we'll go ahead and start into your
okay. Specific
book, and that is, and you've defined this a little bit already, but you just mentioned about civility. You're not just talking about, you know, this isn't a program about mismanners and those types of things, but rather than that, going deeper than that, living with our deepest differences. And it, for the purposes of our program, at least, maybe even in that statement in general in your book, we're talking about, on one footing here, religious differences.
Okay, well, civility, which is often viewed as a kind of wimp word, as a squeamish, something about niceness and Tea Party manners and so on, far from it.
Right.
Civility is a classical Republican virtue and a strong democratic necessity. What does it mean? It refers to the rights, the responsibilities, and the respects that everyone in the public square has when they understand the importance of freedom of conscience for everyone. In other words, I'm a Christian, but I respect the rights of atheists, Jews, Muslims, Mormons, Scientologists. I respect, in fact, I don't respect the views sometimes, say Scientology is rather a weird belief, but I respect the rights of freedom of conscience to hold those views. So civility is about the so-called three R's, rights, responsibilities, and respect. And it's a very, very important political virtue. And if it breaks down, you descend towards a Hobbesian war of all against all, and America's increasingly becoming that, extremely dangerous.
As I was reading there, of course, we see that on a regular basis, the rhetoric has been raised very high at different times, and we see that taking place right now. We'll deal with that throughout the program. Let me say we got to take a quick commercial break, but when we come back from the break, I want to let our listeners know that you can certainly participate in our discussion today. There's three ways that you can do that. One is by a toll-free number that's good all across the nation. You can call that at 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. You can also participate via Twitter. It's Knowing the Truth is the account there on Twitter. And then also I have email up and running, and the email is kevin@knowingthetruth.org. We'll be back in just a moment to speak with our special guest, Os Guinness, about the case for civility and why our future depends on it. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Take a point of economic news from around the globe.
The recession and the fear that a U.S. slowdown will spread around the globe.
We are your station for teaching and talk in tough times.
You're listening to Christian Talk 660. It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Speedy D's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Speedy D's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Speedy D's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Speedy D's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Many people struggle with anger, depression, parenting, or even their marriage. 2 Timothy 3:16 tells us all scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. Learn more at the National Association of Nouthetic Counselors National Conference, October 5th through 7th in Spartanburg. You'll hear from nationally known speakers and authors like James McDonald, Jay Adams, and David Pallison. This year's pre-conference focuses on finances with Crown Financial Ministries' Dr. Howard Dayton. Register online at nanc.org. That's nanc.org.
More and more, people are deciding to secure their family safety by applying for a South Carolina concealed weapons permit. Dry Fire's class includes the NRA basic pistol course and state training requirements for a concealed carry permit. The class includes instruction from NRA certified instructors, info on South Carolina gun laws, the written exam, and qualifying with a firearm on the outdoor range. Register for South Carolina's concealed weapons permit class by calling 608-1522 or log on to dry-fire.com.
Psalm 119, verse 105. Thy word, O Lord, is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Weekday mornings at 9:30, discover God's path for your life when you study the Bible with Dr. Michael Youssef and Christian Talk 660 on Leading the Way.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. I want to make you aware of something here as we go back into our discussion. We're speaking with Dr. Os Guinness about one of his latest books, came out in 2008. It is published, as I was mentioning earlier, by Harper One, and I've got some copies to give away here in the studio. We'll mail these copies out to you, though. So if you would like a copy of the book, your question or your comment today as you call in or email or send a tweet, be happy to provide you with a copy as long as they last. Let me mention that one of the reasons that Os Guinness is on the program today was I was looking over the National Conference on Christian Apologetics. I was speaking with Alex McFarland recently. Alex is again bringing the National Conference on Christian Apologetics to the Charlotte area. It's going to be on November 13th and 14th in Charlotte. You don't want to miss it. There's going to be a number of folks that will be there. The theme of this year's conference is Apologetics and the Local Church. And so Chuck Colson will be there, Os Guinness, William Lane Craig, Dinesh D'Souza, K. Arthur, many others will be there. There's a lot of breakout sessions. Hank Hennegraaff will be there again this year. And so just a number of folks. If you want more information about that, the best place to go, the easiest URL that I could give you is the one for this broadcast, knowingthetruth.org. Right in the middle of the page, there's a link there for you to click on for the National Conference on Christian Apologetics. With that, let's go back to our discussion with Os Guinness today. Let me give you the number. It's 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535 if you want to comment on our discussion or ask a question of our special guest about the subject of civility. Dr. Guinness, just before the break, I was going to mention that I would like to ask you about the five considerations that you list in your book that you say form the challenge that confronts all Americans. Do you mind if we go through those five and have you articulate them a little bit to us here on the broadcast?
Kevin, you'll have to remind me of some of those myself.
I,
a long time since I wrote that. Incidentally, my name is Oz. It's spelled with an S, but pronounced with a Z.
Okay, great. I will do it. Oz, let me read the exact question that you post here, or the exact challenge that you say. The first one is, it says this, rather than summarizing it, just to jog your memory. It says, first and most important, Americans must face the fact that the challenge of living with our deepest, that is, our religiously grounded differences, is one of the world's great issues today. Now, that's quite a statement to list that as being one of the great issues today, but I'd like to get you to just expound upon that a little bit, about maybe a little bit between our differences in diversity, and just talking about why you see that as one of the primary issues that's facing the world.
Well, when you think of the world problems, you think of things like climate change and HIV/AIDS and nuclear terrorism and things like that. But actually, underlying many of these is this challenge of living with our differences. Sounds abstract, but it underlies the other. You can immediately think of all the sectarian clashes. For instance, if 100 million were killed in the last century in war, and another 100 million under political repression, mainly under communism, yet another 100 million were killed in ethnic and sectarian violence. So you can think, say, obviously we've seen the Sunni and the Shia in Iraq not long ago. Across the Kashmir, it's the Hindus and the Muslims. Go down to, say, some of the Indian states, it's the Hindu nationalists killing Christians. Go down to Sri Lanka, it was the Buddhists against the Hindus. And, of course, not long ago in Northern Ireland, it was Protestants against Catholics. And you can see this tremendous challenge. Now, the sad thing is, was America used to have what Madison called the true remedy. In other words, the best solution to how you live with our deep differences. But in the last 50 years, with the rise of the culture warring and so on, it's broken down. And America is no longer an example to the world. Mm. It's a problem that needs to be solved here.
Maybe that leads nicely, I think, into your second point that you make here. You say this, second, all members of the world's educated classes must face the fact that the perspective that has dominated Western thinking about religion for more than a century, namely the secularization theory, is seriously flawed and damaging in its influence. Expound upon that, if you would, please.
Well, take the theory itself. Growing out of the Enlightenment, great thinkers such as Auguste Comte and others, the idea came, to put it very simply, the more modern you are, the less religious you are. So that Europe was the model, and in the future, religion would disappear. And America, which was the most modern country in the world and the most religious country in the world, was something of an exception. Now, that's collapsed. Mm-hmm. We now see, through the work of people like David Martin and others, that it was philosophically biased. In other words, the secularists smuggled their own assumptions into their theory. But it was also just plain factually wrong. And you can see a grand revision since 1975 with the Iranian Revolution. We can see a resurgence of religion almost all around the world. And so now the secularization theory in its hard form has collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
It does have important elements, but it's collapsed. But we've got to distinguish, Kevin, between secularization, that's a theory about a process, distinguish that from secularism, which is a philosophy. That has not collapsed. And you can see, say, with the new atheists like Richard Dawkins and so on, that it is pretty powerful and partly a reaction to the religious right.
Mm. Is that secularization that you speak about, is it synonymous with your term, a naked public square?
Well, the naked public square is made by a number of factors. One is secularization, exactly as you said. But another is separationism, the new idea which burst out in the 1940s in the Everson case, that the public square should be strictly neutral and there should be, as Justice Jackson said, a high and impregnable wall. Now, that's radically new. Jefferson, whom they quote, did not believe in that. He believed in a wall of separation, but as you probably know, Jefferson, every Sunday he was president and in Washington, he went to the biggest church service in the country, which is under the roof of the Capitol. And he himself was not a Christian. He was more of a deist, but he had a very utilitarian, functional approach that he knew religion was necessary for a democracy, and so he supported it, not because he believed in it. So you have separationism plus secularization, and then, of course, you do have a number of noisy secularists who come in on this church-state separation because it's in their interest, too.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned as the third challenge that we need to recognize being the idea of a global era that is raising a brand new issue for our time specifically, and that is the emergence of what you term as a global public square. So it's not this physical location that we had in the early American experience where you would physically go to an area known as the public square, but now it's global. Like this radio broadcast right here, even we get listeners in Brazil. I've had people call from the UK, from Northern Ireland, you know, from all over the states. This is we're now in this new era where it's so easy to have so many different people involved in the conversation. Is that what you were discussing?
No, exactly. In other words, if you look at Western history, the idea of a public square is very precious because you go back to the Greek agora in Athens, say, or a Roman forum. It was the place where public affairs were debated, deliberated, debated, decided. And then, of course, it became associated with things like the Houses of Parliament or the French Assembly or the American Congress. And there were always other parts of it, like the op-ed pages of the paper, New York Times, Washington Post, or whatever. But today, in the age of the computer, we see a virtual public square, and that's the significance, say, of the Danish cartoons controversy. So, say, when the Pope gave his speech at Regensburg, it was an academic speech. I gather he didn't even run it by his counselors. But it was picked up all around the world, and immediately the Muslims were able to mount a huge campaign against it because of the power of the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing the emergence, very rudimentary at the moment, of a global public square. And the question is, what are going to be the manners? What are going to be the 3 R's, the rights, responsibilities, and respect, as to how we negotiate our differences in the global public square?
Mm-hmm.
The blogs are not a good precedent.
Yeah.
See the unfiltered venting of prejudice and hatred and half-formed ideas. And the blogs, and now sadly some of the channel networks and so on, they're accentuating the prejudice and the hatred. So
yeah.
We have got to figure out how we do it civilly.
And notice that, you know, one of the problems or technological advances that adds to that issue, let me put it that way rather than just problem, but is that we can make an instantaneous response. And obviously, our responses a lot of times call for, more thought to be given to what we're going to say. But now, you know, we could text somebody and in a moment, get a call, respond immediately, fire off an email right away. I've encouraged some folks at my church and just on the radio program here as well to use the draft in your email, draft your response, and then maybe wait a day or so. Just because we can respond instantaneously doesn't mean that we should respond instantaneously. Do you agree?
Oh, I solidly agree, Kevin. And I would say, too, that while civility is the classical word for what we need politically in terms of manners, we, who are followers of Jesus, have a much, much deeper stake in this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you look at our Lord. He called us to be people who follow his way. What does that include? In loving our enemies.
Mm.
So any Christian demonization is anti-Christian.
Mm.
Or he called us to forgive without limit, to do good when people do wrong to us, and so on and so on. Or to, as the Apostle Paul says, speak the truth with love. Now, the tragic thing in America right now is that with the collapse of the religious right at the end of the last election, Christians are a key part of the ending of public discourse. And there's a huge amount of hate, I would put as strong as that, of prejudice, of demonizing, of stereotyping by Christians, of distortion of truth, misrepresentation of positions. This is a shame on the church and a scandal to the church. And one of the challenges today, we are followers of Jesus, and we've got to do the Lord's work in the Lord's way.
So you're definitely not calling in this book, per se, to a passivism, you know, that we don't respond at all. We just allow people that we disagree with in this country who have completely different views of the taking the direction of the country. You're not saying that we should just drift into the background and accept a marginalization of the church and what we have to say. You're saying that we should speak against these things, but we should do it in a way that is more in keeping with the scriptures. Is that a correct characterization of your point?
No, you said it exactly well. We respect people's right to believe things. Or to put it in the old way, we respect people's right to be wrong. The problem, say, of communism or even Catholicism early at the time of the Inquisition, they gave error no rights. Whereas you look in the scriptures, God even allows us to choose hell rather than, using Roger Williams' term, raping our conscience and forcing us to believe in him.
Mm.
And hell is the ultimate argument for freedom of conscience for Christians. So we respect people's right to believe what they believe, even when we disagree radically. But then we engage with their ideas peacefully and lovingly, the truth with love, in order to convince them peacefully and persuasively and civilly of a better way. In other words, the way that we're arguing for, and so on. So I don't mean some sloppy form of tolerance or just backing off from engagement or whatever.
Interesting. I want to go to the point specifically here with American culture when we come back from the break. You mentioned in your book that many aspects of the American way are under severe stress and can be hardly capable of being a model for anybody. I want to talk about that specific challenge that you list in your book when we come back from the break. Let me tell our listeners, you're certainly welcome to participate in the program today. 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Twitter is up and running, and so is email, kevin@knowingthetruth.org.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
I'm Isaac Feinman here with Dr. George Auger. Dr. Auger, why did you decide to do your half hour to help?
Isaac, when I started to think about the upstate of South Carolina and the information that they get about health care, I thought they needed a place where they could get honest, relevant, practical information on all kinds of health care topics. My desire has always been to help families live healthier, happier, more vibrant lives.
Listen to your half hour to help with Dr. George Auger Wednesdays at 12:30 and also visit augercairo.com. There's good subs, and then there's great subs. Hi, I'm Isaac Feinman, here to tell you about Firehouse Subs and Taylors on Wade Hampton Boulevard. How about that hook and ladder sub, huh? Smoked turkey breast, Virginia honey ham, smothered with Monterey Jack cheese, and fully involved. You make it a combo, just add chips and a drink, and how about a freshly baked cookie or a warm brownie? You'll enjoy it. It's a great sub at Firehouse Subs and Taylors. More and more, people are deciding to secure their family's safety by applying for a South Carolina concealed weapons permit. Dry Fire's class includes the NRA basic pistol course and state training requirements for a concealed carry permit. The class includes instruction from NRA-certified instructors, info on South Carolina gun laws, the written exam, and qualifying with a firearm on the outdoor range. Register for South Carolina's concealed weapons permit class by calling 608-1522 or log on to dry-fire.com.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie D's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie D's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie D's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie D's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Many people struggle with anger, depression, parenting, or even their marriage. 2 Timothy 3:16 tells us all Scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. Learn more at the National Association of Nouthetic Counselors National Conference, October 5th through 7th in Spartanburg. You'll hear from nationally known speakers and authors like James McDonald, Jay Adams, and David Pallison. This year's pre-conference focuses on finances with Crown Financial Ministries' Dr. Howard Dayton. Register online at nanc.org. That's nanc.org.
Here's Dr. Albert Moeller for Knowing the Truth and Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Folks are living in a time when truth is being marginalized, subverted, and just being confused. God is just not an important part of their intellectual framework, and they think they can get along just fine without him. Of course, we know that isn't true. I'm thankful for the ministry of Kevin Bowling and Knowing the Truth. I want to encourage you and all your friends to listen regularly to Knowing the Truth.
Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 o'clock on Christian Talk 660 and online at knowingthetruth.org.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half and then some of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. We're speaking with Oz Guinness today, the case for civility and why our future depends on it. And we're talking about this whole area of civility. We've been looking specifically at these five challenges that Oz puts in his book here, talking about these things must be dealt with in order for us to think through, and from a biblical standpoint, what it is to be an American citizen, what it is to model civility, not only across our country, but now across the world. And so I found this book very interesting. I'll confess I'm not quite sure if I agree with all the parts of it. I'm still thinking through it as we go through. I think so far what I've talked with Dr. Guinness about, I agree with. And so I'm looking forward to just thinking through the rest of this. Before we go back to our conversation with Oz Guinness, let's go to the phone lines very quickly. We got Carl from Simpsonville, South Carolina, on the line. Carl, welcome into the discussion today. And I don't know, Carl, did we lose you? Okay, well, Carl, if you call back, I'll try to get you in as soon as possible, unless that was a statement, Carl. I'm not sure. Just kidding. Oz, before we go back to our discussion here, I had mentioned just before the break which one of these numbers that I wanted to talk to you about, number four in the list of the five items that you tell us to take as a challenge here, things that we must wrestle it with. You say this in number four, that Americans must face the embarrassing fact that just when the world is ready to notice the significance of the American way of being modern, many aspects of the American way are under severe stress and are hardly capable of being a model for anyone. Please articulate.
Well, America used to be called the world's first new nation. In the sense that many of the problems of the modern world were first raised and answered by the brilliant founders of this nation. You could take, say, immigration, the idea of the melting pot, but certainly the biggest one for me, the First Amendment, and the way America has disestablished the church and allowed all faiths to be voluntary, and as a result, they've all flourished in such a condition. The trouble is, most of the world was not interested when that was originally said, because they had their own ways. So broken down, for instance, there are hardly any established churches in the world left today, a few. But now they suddenly realize that America's been grappling with these big issues for 200 years, and they look across, interesting. You can see things like the culture warring, which show that the American way of doing it has broken down in the last 50 years. And to me, that's a tragedy. So, the challenge of living with no way we're going to start with a solution, say, at the least, with the Arab countries. The bitterness and the violence is far too extreme. There's probably no way we could start in Europe, although there are some encouraging signs there. The Europeans have some of the first principles, but they never work them out. And look at the chaos, say, of the French reaction to the Muslims, or the British and the Dutch multiculturalism, which proved a disaster and just bred enclaves of terrorism. So here's the country, the United States, which 200 years has both the principles and the experience of tackling these things, and most of the time had a pretty good solution. Mm-hmm. So the framers had a rotten record on race, say in slavery, and they didn't have a very good record, say, on women. It was only 1920s when women got the vote. But when it comes to religious liberty, the framers got it right almost from the very beginning. But it's breaking down today with the extremism and the culture wars. That's what I mean.
Well, it's an extremely difficult thing to maintain, right? I mean, it's a bold statement to make in the very beginning, very aggressive, obviously, in its approach. But to maintain that throughout thousands of years or hundreds of years, in our case, is an extremely difficult prospect, don't you think?
Absolutely. And that's why George Washington called it the Great Experiment. And as you know, Kevin, experiments are open-ended, mm-hmm. and they're not finished. And so I would put it like this. Constitutionally, there is no limit what anyone can believe in this country. If you want to believe in radical Islam as a belief, or witchcraft, both of which I disagree with profoundly, and they're very dangerous, one spiritually, one politically. If you want to believe in anything in terms of a belief, not behavior, but belief, you can believe it. That's the constitutional right. Mm-hmm. Now, culturally speaking, not everything should be permissible. Some beliefs would bring the whole thing down. Say the radical Muslims who want to replace the Constitution with a caliphate. Or you have the Reconstructionists in the extreme Christian community, like Gary North, who, as he puts it, would like to play the pluralistic game to put the enemies of God out of the game and then give them their rights. Mm-hmm. And those are interesting, but you can see the tension. Constitutionally, there's no limit to what anyone can believe. That's the First Amendment. Culturally, there is a limit. Now, how do you bridge that? Well, Jefferson said it through democratic debate. In other words, unless the best beliefs, and we, of course, as followers of Jesus, believe that's the Christian beliefs, truth, justice, humanity, and so on, as the devil, unless the best beliefs prevail, which means keeping on persuading, on arguing, generation after generation, well, then the wrong beliefs will get their way, and eventually the whole system will collapse.
So it's not through coercion at all, does not become the methodology of choice, but persuasion becomes the methodology.
Well, that's right. In Europe in the past, when you had established churches, they just coerced. The church, whatever it was, Catholic or Protestant, had the state's sword, in other words, force, and its purse, in other words, government money, behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else was second class or a good deal worse. Now, that went. And the First Amendment removes the sword and purse of a state behind any religious community. And so it shifts, what it does is shift the whole political discourse from coercion, forcing people, to persuasion, winning people. And so, say, take pro-life. I'm strongly pro-life. I'm strongly pro one man, one woman marriage. But we have to argue for that and win hearts and minds. And that's what Wilberforce had to do about slavery. He had to change the whole mindset of the English and European. And sadly, he couldn't do it at that time with the Americans. They stuck to slavery.
Mm.
But he had to win people through persuasion.
Mm. I think, what was it, 38 years or something like that with William Wilberforce?
47.
Wow, okay. I knew that it was... it came
3 days before he died.
Wow.
It passed.
Came in stages, yeah. Okay, well, I want to get to this fifth one that you mentioned here, and then I've got a couple of other questions to ask you as well as our time is slipping away. But the fifth one, just to finish the 5 points that you make here, the last one you talk about, I'm trying to find it right here in your book, but here we go. Okay, it says this, the developments and conflicts over religion and public life of the past are coming to a head in a way that could produce a watershed moment in the United States. What is that watershed moment that you're referring to?
Well, put it like this. If you look at Europe, it's the most secular, least Christian continent in the world. You ask what are the many, many reasons behind it. The main one is powerful reactions to corrupt state churches in the past. Take the French. The French talked of strangling the last king with the guts of the last priest. In other words, the Catholic Church at the time of the Enlightenment was oppressive and unjust and in bed with the state. And so the Revolution, the French Revolution, threw off both church and state. And that happened in many, many European countries. Now, if you look at this country, that's never needed to happen because of the genius of the First Amendment. It disestablished churches. There's nothing to react against. It is voluntary, and faith has flourished. But here's the point, Kevin. In the last 50 years, partly to do with the culture warring, also to do with the religious right, there's a steadily mounting American equivalent of a vicious European repudiation of religion among the educated classes. Early on, they were complaining about church and state. Take, say, Kevin Phillips' book, American Theocracy, or Chris Hedges' book, American Fascists. Then came the rise of the new atheists. And obviously, they see Muslim extremists around the world, but they're also directly addressing the religious right. And you can see we have contributed, through our unwisdom and sometimes our extremism in the religious right, to the rise of a vicious anti-religious movement in the educated classes. That is extremely fateful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me add to that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me add another thing.
Okay.
When you have the extremism, as you've had since the last election, take, say, Governor Palin's terrible distortions of the health care bill and so on. In other words, distortions of truth and demonizing of enemies by many Christians. It will build towards a climax, and as anthropologists point out, often the climax is the scapegoating of a victim. Were America to have another public assassination, as of Martin Luther King or the presidents earlier on, it would be a disaster for America, but a double disaster for the church, because the Christian voice has not been on the side of civility, peacemaking, loving our enemies. It's been on the side of inflaming much of the conservatism that is becoming a populist extremism. So we want to back off and do the Lord's work in the Lord's way and say, no, we are different. We follow Jesus, and he called us to love our enemies, and so on.
Now, some people may conclude when they hear you say that, they may conclude, well, wait a second, this is some sort of a pathway to ecumenism.
No, that's not it at all. No, not at all. Ecumenism is the idea that there's a lowest common denominator. And if we talk, say, all the religions of the world, we'll reach that happy state. No. I make very clear in the book, and then I haven't got there yet, differences are deep and irreducible. And those differences make a difference. So the civility I'm talking about is a framework of political rights, responsibilities, and respect within which we have a right to be different. But we know how to engage other people with differences civilly without blowing them out of the water.
Great answer there. Really appreciate that. We're going to take our final break, and when we come back from that break, we'll be in the final segment here. I may have one or two more questions on this subject, but I also want to get you to comment on a recent news item just the last day or so about Francis Schaeffer's son, about not being repentant. We'll talk to you in just a minute. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Here's Dr. Tony Dean.
McLucas said the supervisor took down Debbie's flag herself. Can I just interject something here? You would have to shoot me or physically just come and put the cuffs on me. I would have gone to wherever that flag was, and I said, you give me my flag, or I'm going to whoop you. Now, that's North Carolina language. And some of you may take offense to that and say, well, that's not the Christian perspective. Oh, yeah, it is.
Weekday mornings, 7 to 9 on Christian Talk 660.
Many people struggle with anger, depression, parenting, or even their marriage. 2 Timothy 3:16 tells us all scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. Learn more at the National Association of Nouthetic Counselors National Conference, October 5th through 7th in Spartanburg. You'll hear from nationally known speakers and authors like James McDonald, Jay Adams, and David Pallison. This year's pre-conference focuses on finances with Crown Financial Ministries Dr. Howard Dayton. Register online at nanc.org. That's nanc.org.
With tail-thrashing dinosaurs, 5 state-of-the-art theaters, plus an incredible 160 exhibits, the Creation Museum presents a journey through history that will capture your imagination and appeal to your senses. Walk through the lush Garden of Eden and see exotic animals. Voyage with Noah on the Ark, or buckle into your planetarium seat and prepare for liftoff. Seats rumble and a cool mist rises in our special effects theater, and animatronic people converse with our guests. Come face to face with a monstrous moving sauropod and have your children settle up on our Triceratops. Browse through our Dragon Hall bookstore to find the latest in DVDs, reference books, and curricula. And our beautiful outdoor gardens lend a finishing touch to your museum experience. Located minutes from the Cincinnati airport, the Creation Museum provides 60,000 square feet of family fun. Prepare to believe.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the last segment of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. I would encourage you normally to call in right now, but I doubt really that we'll have time to take your question. We took the last break here a little bit late. I ran over. In fact, we're not really going to have much time here to go through the rest of the book. Obviously, we have that problem with every book we go over. But I try to give you enough information to whet your appetite to read the book. As you can see or hear from our discussion today, there's a lot of things in here that need to be thought about very carefully. And so I would recommend this book to you. It's called The Case for Civility and Why Our Future Depends on It, written by Oz Guinness, and you can get it through Harper One. That's Harper One, and you can go out to their website and find out some more information. You can get it elsewhere, of course, as well, on Amazon or your Christian bookstore or a number of different places. But I would, it's not a very long book. It's not a very big book. Wouldn't tax you too much to read it, other than it'll spur a lot of thoughts, and it will require for you to think through these issues, as I'm doing myself, to think through these issues and to bring to bear the scriptures upon these issues. And so I encourage you to do that. I also mentioned that Oz Guinness is going to be in our area. He's going to be right up the 85 there in Charlotte on November 13th and 14th. And so if you're interested in going, Oz Guinness is going to be there along with Kay Arthur, Chuck Colson, William Lane Craig, Hank Hanegraaff, Alex McFarland, and many, many others. It's a great apologetic conference. You don't want to miss it. Remember when I had Ken Ham on just recently, he was faulting the level of apologetically understanding what we believe as the reason why so many young people are leaving the church. And so here is this conference that's called Apologetics and the Local Church. That's what they're going to be zeroing in on, and you don't want to miss those events that will be taking place there. The link to all that information about that conference is right on the knowingthetruth.org webpage. So all you got to do is go there, www.knowingthetruth.org, and you'll get all the information. Two more questions for you, Oz, if you don't mind. I did want to get you to just address Francis Schaeffer's son, Frankie. I don't know. I know he doesn't go by that moniker anymore, but I wanted to get you to address what he said in just a moment. But before we do, just to conclude our discussion, even though we couldn't go through your entire book, would something like the Together for the Gospel events, or maybe now the Gospel Coalition, would those be very positive steps that you would see in the right direction?
I haven't seen those actually close up. From what I've heard of them, they would be.
Mm-hmm.
But what we need is Christian voices in the public square. They, as I understand it, those who are more gathering people who really are orthodox and committed to Christ to stand together. But what we need is powerful, persuasive voices in the public square, and that's a rather different thing.
Mm. I had one of those on about the pro-life issue. His name is going to escape me right now, but his book doesn't. It was called The Case for Life. You being a strong pro-life proponent, you may remember that. But I thought he gave some of the greatest statements and arguments for the case for life that I had heard thus far in the pro-life movement.
Well, that's terrific. But was he making them to Christians, or was he making them to liberals, atheists, and so on?
Both. He did
I'm not attacking him. That's wonderful.
Right.
But far too much Christian apologetics is just talking to Christians.
Yeah.
Fire.
Mm-hmm.
And the great need is not to talk about apologetics, but actually to do it out into communities that disagree with us, especially the public square.
Mm. Well, our time has escaped us there, I'm sorry to say, because I'm really enjoying our conversation. But could I just get you to comment briefly about Francis Schaeffer's son? I know that you have written about the things that he has written about. Any sort of statement just kind of summarizing your comments that you've made already about what he is saying about his father and the entire ministry there at Libri?
Well, I'll just say briefly, I'm not here to attack Frank Schaeffer, but anyone who really wants to know why it's happened might go and Google my name and Books and Culture and the article on Frank Schaeffer there. That explains a lot of the background.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his recent blogs or his contributions in the Rachel Maddow show have been absolutely outrageous. And his blogs in the Christian homeschooling is a new religious Red Guard movement are just absolutely outrageous.
Mm.
So what stuns me is that Christians still buy his books and invite him on their radio shows. And he's so viciously anti-evangelical. Well, by all means, let him be. But don't let us support his crazy views.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that comment. I know that that was something that's near and dear to your heart, having actually lived there at Libri for a couple of years under that ministry there. And so I appreciate you at least giving us that.
A close friend of his.
A close friend of his, and obviously with his mom and dad as well. Well,
yeah.
Thank you very much, Dr. Guinness, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with me on the Knowing the Truth radio program today. Look forward to seeing you in Charlotte.
Thanks, Kevin. My pleasure.
Okay. We've been speaking with Dr. Oz Guinness, and he is the author of his latest book is The Case for Civility and Why Our Future Depends on It. I mentioned that throughout the broadcast that it's put out by Harper One. You can go out there and get a copy of this book. I want to encourage you to listen in to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast on Thursday. My guest is going to be the one and only Dr. Jay Adams will be my guest on Thursday's broadcast. We'll be talking about New Thetic Counseling. We'll be talking about his session that he'll be giving right here in Spartanburg at the National Association of New Thetic Counselors conference that's coming up there. Remember, the Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free."
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660. WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.
It's 2 o'clock, time now for Fox News on Christian.